Hey guys, it's Peter Crouch and Chris Stark here from That Peter Crouch Podcast, and we're currently sponsored by Prime.
This holiday season, Amazon brings you an unmissable month of festive football.
Prime members can enjoy 10 Premier League games.
All live.
And Tuesday's UEFA Champions League must-watch match, included with Prime.
And where is it, Chris?
It's on Prime, Crouchy.
I thought so.
I just, again, like the Hagel trade. I just don't quite get the Hagel trade. He never would have been expensive. And now you're going to spend your time trying to find another Hagel. Just like Ottawa with Nick Paul. Nick Paul was not going to be expensive. He wanted like $3.9 million, all he wanted. And now you're going to try to, and what they could use right now is a Nick Paul.
Everybody, thank you everybody for joining us to another episode of Drop in the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. We got a good one. I was telling Tim before we started taping, I'm a little nervous. I say that a lot. I was actually a little nervous. This guy was one of the guys I watched growing up as a kid. He's been around the block and then some. He was a staple and still is a staple with the ESPN, all over the NHL, the NCAA. We have John Buchagras joining the show tonight. John, how are you, my friend?
Doing great. Great to be here. Those are very kind words. It's been 28 long years at ESPN, but all kinds of different iterations. And it's been a fun place to work because it does constantly change and evolve and back and forth. We had hockey. We didn't have hockey. We got it again. So, yeah, life is good. Life's a blessing. Very grateful.
That's what I was talking to Tim before this, before we jump into the kind of format of the show. I was wondering, have you seen the popularity of hockey? Because everybody's so concerned about, you got to get a national TV deal, you got to get the national deal. Do you see that correlation? Like, okay, we got the ESPN deal, popularity's high. We lose it, we go to Outdoor Living Network, popularity wanes. Is that actually a thing?
I think it is, for sure. I think you felt the energy when the TNT ESPN announcement was made 3 years ago, 4 years ago now. And I do think it matters, especially in this world where there's a lot of slices of sports pizza out there now. You know, when I was growing up, there was no English Premier League soccer where kids would buy shirts from Liverpool and pick a team to like, right? And women's sports have exploded. WNBA is growing. So there's only so many slices out there. So you really got to make sure you're on the forefront and be very aggressive in that situation. And we are, let's face it, especially when you see what's happening with Comcast and they're spinning off all their networks now. What would have that meant if the NHL was in the middle of that deal, right? So to be, especially with ESPN right now, we're pivoting in the streaming world pretty well. So I think it's the right place to be. But we'll see now in the future as these big giants get involved with sports, Amazon, we'll see if Apple or, you know, Google, these are the monsters now that eventually are going to have everything. They just have too much cash. So we'll see how ESPN deals with that and going forward. But yeah, right now, I think the league's in a good place from that standpoint in terms of getting your content out there.
Yeah, because it is in transition. I worked for NBC last year and then all of a sudden, you know, the Hawks pulled their coverage and they went to the Chicago Sports Network. And we heard TSN is trying to slowly, potentially maybe move out of the NHL network, get out of the MLSC, that sort of thing. Do you see that's the future? Less like ESPN cable network, more streaming, more internet, more, you know, on-demand stuff?
That's obviously happening, right? Obviously, the business is cratering. The regional sports network, which used to be pretty profitable, is collapsing a little bit. So, yeah, there's no doubt. And at some point, you hope some sort of service can come along where we can get everything on one spot, one platform. Again, whether or not Amazon buys everything, they certainly are. Apple, again, how they want to get involved, how those big tech companies want to get involved, and how the sports league pivot to be involved with them. You know, we have a football game on Netflix coming up. What does that mean? So they're all kind of dabbling their toes in the water. Apple with Friday Night Baseball and the MLS, obviously Amazon getting the Thursday night package. So it's going to shake out in some ways, but obviously that shift is happening from cable TV, which is a great way to watch sports. Let's face it, the last channel, it's quicker, it's faster, it's better for sports. Streaming is for movies and to binge watch TV shows. It's not for sports. Mm-hmm. So they got to figure that out.
Do you see, like when I was playing 10 years ago, hockey was number four of the big four. Mm-hmm. You mentioned soccer, WNBA, all these other things showing up on, you know, the scope in North America. Is hockey still holding that spot in the big four? Are we being pushed out by, you know, MLS, the WNBA, other, or is it still the big four and then everybody else?
I think so, for sure, because, you know, NASCAR's taking a hit down. Maybe NASCAR at one point might have pulled ahead of hockey, right? The Jeff Gordon, Dale Earnhardt era, but it has slipped. MLS, I don't think, is really a threat. WNBA, when Caitlin Clark plays, for sure. But other than that, not quite. But they're definitely coming, for sure. But is it a $6 billion standalone
league? No.
No. So right now, you know, and obviously there's an opportunity in America for the NHL to grow. That's the point. You know, people, yeah, there's 32 teams, but there's only 26 in America. So you have a couple more markets, Atlanta, Houston, that you could go to try to, you know, enhance that revenue going forward. So I still think it's in a good place. It's always going to be a niche type sport because of the people growing up playing it is limited because of ice and because of cost, unfortunately. Yeah. And so it's just the way it is, but it's an awesome niche sport and it can be a healthy one going forward and with some international potential as well. As you know, football is getting more and more international. They're trying to grow it. And obviously soccer is hugely international. So NHL has some of that potential. The only problem is the places where it's international, the countries are very small. So there's not a big population in Sweden and Finland for scale purposes. Anytime you're starting a business or businesses, you need scale. And that's where hockey's limited in the European sense.
And then when they do go over there, they don't tell anybody until like an hour before the game. And they go, surprise,
we're here.
We got a game, everybody. You want to watch it? And we're like, no clue you're over there, you guys. Sorry, let's get to the meat of the show. Tim's chomping to get going. So, Tim, what are we doing today with John?
Yeah, so we know you're kind of all over the league and you cover all the teams in different capacities. So we kind of made this little list. We're calling this 20 questions with John Bucicross. And there's 20 of them here. So we try to limit our answers and our conversation to each of them to a minute, minute and a half. But we'll go through the line and start with the Rangers. They're a big topic, obviously, the last week or so, and really all season long. If you look at their disappointing start by their standards, what do you look as the number one reason that they've had a slow start?
Well, they might just not be as good a team as we thought they were, for sure. A little bit of age in key spots, a little lack of physicality on the back end especially. And so, yeah, just not a real dynamic team in front of their dynamic goalie. You just take it one guy at a time. They all, outside of Panarin, who continues to age well and be a real force, everybody else has flaws, you know, whether it's Fox not being physical and fast. There's little flaws there. Zibanejad seems completely detached and floating around, not stopping and starting, which is the first sign of age and lack of interest, is not stopping and starting. Mm-hmm. In Pittsburgh, Crosby still stops and starts. Malkin no longer stops and starts.
Well, he never did. Malkin never really did.
Yeah, he plays with flow and momentum. When you're a bigger guy, that helps because you don't have the short, powerful piston legs. Mm-hmm. So you do want to have momentum to get those. Like the other night, he had that breakaway. He was pulling away from a faster skater behind him, which was impressive. So, yeah, I think overall, it's just maybe overrate like we tend to do with things in New York. We overrate.
Which of these four teams will be the next one to make the playoffs? The Buffalo Sabres, Ottawa Senators, Detroit Red Wings, and Philadelphia Flyers.
Wow, that's a perfect group because that is so difficult. Man, that's hard. I would say of those four, I just kind of like, for some reason, I like the Brady Tkachuk leadership. I like the Tim Stützle six skill that a lot of casual hockey fans have no idea is a 100-point guy. And then they have a goalie now, you know? Buffalo doesn't really have – they seem completely – disorganized, and the goalie seems okay. Detroit doesn't really have a goalie, and Philadelphia doesn't really have a goalie. And although Michkov's a star, but so I would have to lean a little bit towards Ottawa, believe it or not.
I like it. This next one's a little bit tougher. I wasn't sure quite how to phrase it, whether it's should or will or even can, but should the Penguins trade Sidney Crosby?
I mean, no. You would, unless he wants to, you're doing him a favor. He made Mario rich. He made the other owners rich. He made line mates rich. You plant a line with Sidney Crosby, you live in a bigger house. Says he's one of those kinds of players.
Yeah.
He makes people rich. And so he brought so much wealth to so many people that if he goes, hey, you know what? I know I got three cups, but this is just not going anywhere. I'd like to give three more good years of myself to a cause, whether I go to Montreal, my boyhood team, whether I go play with Nathan MacKinnon. I don't think that really makes much sense to me besides the MacKinnon relationship. They can hang out in the summer. So unless he finds a cause near his parents who are still very involved in his life and near, you know, what makes sense to him, then sure, I would do anything if he would like it. I think so they owe that to him.
You don't see Dubas going to him and be like, hey, Sid, like, we're in a bad spot. We are nowhere near the playoffs. We want to move you. What do you think?
I don't, because no? First of all, you're not going to get a lot for him at his age. You know, you're not going to get a big number one draft pick and Tim Stützle, like, you know what I mean? Yeah. A ready-made guy. You might get it. You'll get a number one and a three and maybe a guy. Mm-hmm. And you'll clear 8.7. But then, you know, and that's the thing people don't understand. A lot of fans don't understand that if you lose a guy via free agency, you don't lose him for nothing. You gain an $8.7 million player. It's math. It's a hard cap. So, I think they're going to leave it totally in his hands. I think they should. Don't go to him. Don't even say, hey, what do you want to do? If he comes to you, he comes to you. And if he feels like, yeah, you know what? I don't think he will. I think he's a Cal Ripken, you know, Joe Sakic, Steve Yzerman, one franchise guy, because that does have value long term. And you can pivot quickly in this league. And he sees Washington as a team that has rebuilt on the fly and is suddenly a really good team again.
Just a marketing nightmare, too, if they, like, forced him to a trade. Oh,
exactly. And he has the Four Nations. He has the Olympics. So he has carrots that can excite him from an individual standpoint.
Well, speaking of the Four Nations, what do you think was the biggest snub from Team USA's roster?
Yeah, Tate Thompson, for sure. This guy is an elite monster playing in a bad situation. We see what Buffalo does. Sam Reinhart, Ryan O'Reilly.
We see what Buffalo does.
They had all three of those guys at the same time. And they went on to win they didn't go on to prosper. They went on to win a cup.
Yeah.
All three of them.
Yeah.
So obviously that works against it. But I think he's such an elite weapon of size and shooting and one timer, you know, on the power play, whether it's a second unit or a first unit. I really do think he's underappreciated. And that's the guy that I get the Trocheck thing, but whether you put Thompson on the wing, although he really has reinvented himself at the center, but I felt like I would have had him over Kreider, put it that way.
Listen, I'm a Buffalo guy, and you know what's bad when you become just like a verb. Like, oh, he got Buffaloed. Like he did the ball. Oh, it's so bad. But yeah, Tage, I love that guy. He's a moose of a man. And he's got a laser for a shot, and he moves well. He's a terrific player. Absolutely terrific.
Is the Bruins Cup contention window closed?
It was close 2 years ago.
Absolutely. It's all gone. It's just not deep enough or dynamic enough. Marchand's still hanging on as a pretty productive player, but just down a little bit of a notch. I think it'll be harder for him to score playoff goals. Pastrnak is obviously in his prime. He's their one guy. But after that, it's a big drop off.
Now, does Marchand have the Crosby effect in Boston? Because he's a UFA.
I know. That's interesting. That sounds like a difference of opinion. Again, he's going to be 37 in May.
Yeah.
So I think 2 year contract is the number. I think three, although he has taken less for a long time and you may want to do him a little solid. I get that, you know, 3 years, he probably still deserves $5 million a year.
Yeah.
They'll probably try to get him for 4.7, you know, maybe go 4x4 and then really try to, and then you lower it and give him 16 guaranteed. And he's still the captain. That's cool to wear that C.
Yeah.
I think he's going to get his number retired anyway. He's going to end up in the Hall of Fame as well. So, but yeah, that just might be a hard decision for the Bruins to, like, this is the start. We have to kind of do a mini teardown because we have McAvoy and Pastrnak. Unless you decide to trade McAvoy as well and really start over, but
not doing that. You sign Swayman. Yeah.
Right. Swayman, McAvoy, Pastrnak, that's a pretty good three dude foundation.
Yeah.
So, and they might say, you know what? Oh, God, we love Brad, but we're going to let him go. I can't believe that. I think there's a deal to be made. Like, there should have been a deal made for Stamkos. There should be a deal to be made there.
How concerned should Stars fans be with Jason Robertson's decline in production over the past couple of seasons?
Yeah, it's got to be a little concerned. Obviously, you know, keeping up with the pace of the game is always is his issue. He's not a skater. But there's a lot of guys who don't skate well but are still very good and can figure out a way. Matthew Tkachuk, you know, and Brady Tkachuk, they can't really move that well. But, man, they understand the code of the game, and they've unlocked this the combination of how I can be successful. And that's what Jason probably just has to kind of figure out what that is. But, a little concerned. But they're so deep and they have so many good players, it's not vital.
I think that's the problem. They have so many other options where they don't need him to be good. He's only 25. Like it's not like he shouldn't be slowing down at this point, but yeah, I'm a little concerned. I don't think he's going to figure it out, but anyways.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's the next coach to lose his job?
Ooh. Mm. Blonde, brunette, Laviolette. Yeah,
I think Laviolette's okay. I don't think they're going to fire him. I would say probably Detroit or Nashville. probably makes a lot of sense. It might be just a mercy firing for Andrew Burnett, because that team does not, you know, it just does not match his offensive philosophy. You know, you hire him to do a job, and you sign guys who aren't aligned with your coach's offensive, you know, ability. So that probably makes the most sense. But they got to be getting close in Detroit. It just doesn't seem like, again, that what's going to, I think it's more the roster personally, it's not the coach, but so it could be a combo trade coach there just to refresh it. But they've gotten better each year under Lalonde. And this obviously was the first year they've kind of gone a little bit backwards and got a little stale. So it could be coming.
Have you ever seen anything that Montgomery situation gets fired and hired like an hour later to St. Louis? How crazy is that?
Yep, it happens for sure. Now, actually, the last two times the Bruins fired a guy, it was in the offseason, but they were hired within a week. You know, yeah. Cassidy and they both won cups, or Cassidy eventually won a cup, got to the cup final. But, obviously, there's a lot of teams who would have, I think, see him as a difference maker. You know, Buffalo, he'd make those young players better. He's an offensive guy. So he's going to help offensive players, Robert Thomas, Jordan Kyrou, Dylan Holloway, just like he would in Buffalo with Thompson and Quinn,
incredible.
And Paterka and all those guys.
Hey guys, it's Peter Crouch and Chris Stark here from That Peter Crouch Podcast, and we're currently sponsored by Prime.
This holiday season, Amazon brings you an unmissable month of festive football.
Prime members can enjoy 10 Premier League games.
All live.
And Tuesday's UEFA Champions League must-watch match, included with Prime.
And where is it, Chris?
It's on Prime, Crouchy.
I thought so.
Yeah. So he empowers and energizes offensive players. And so every coach with young players would be looking for a coach like that.
Is the Sabres back to the Sabres? Are they the most frustrating team for you? Because you've seen, like, they had so much talent and they just can't figure out. They got a terrific back end with Powers and Dahlin. It's just Bowen Byram's. It's just, what do you make of that whole situation? Because I played there 10, 15 years ago and they were throwing everything in the kitchen sink at it, all the money in the world, and they can't figure it out. Why?
Yeah, well, the organization is not whole. It's not fully staffed. It's, before Lindy Ruff came along, who has experience, there's a lot of inexperience at every level. And so, it's just not a whole organization right now. It needs to somehow get whole. And like, whether it's you call Kenny Holland and say, Kenny, just run the organization, not GM.
Yeah.
We're going to make you president and just, you know, the bones of an organization. It came from Detroit, the finest one in all the land at the start of the 21st century. You know, that was hockey and just making the playoffs every year, multiple cups, getting the cups and losing occasionally. But really, that's how you build. So he knows how to build the organization, hire a young GM and just manage everybody and make them whole again with the making the investment budget wise to have full scouting staff and experience assistants and everything. And that's what they need to do.
Yeah, when I was there, Terry Pegula bought the team, and I think he tried to buy everything. Yeah. And you didn't put good people in good spots to make a good organization. I don't feel like they've done that. They bring back Hall of Famers, LaFontaine, and they brought back Nolan and Ruff and all these people. It's not working. I think that's what you need. Yeah, you need someone who's going to just be stable and just right the ship. All right, sorry, Tim. Hijacked it.
To what degree are the Hawks hurting Bedard by not giving him enough talent to work with?
I think he'll be fine. He's a big boy. He's a competitor. He's talented. So I don't think he'll be damaged in any way. But I think they're a long way away. I just, again, like the Hagel trade. I just don't quite get the Hagel trade. He never would have been expensive. And now you're going to spend your time trying to find another Hagel. Just like Ottawa with Nick Paul. Nick Paul was not going to be expensive. He wanted like $3.9 million, all he wanted. And now you're going to try to – and what they could use right now is a Nick Paul as a second or third line big guy who can body up against Austin Matthews like he did in the playoffs for Tampa Bay a few years back. Like, you got to be careful like when you tear down and who you trade. I just never understood that Hagel trade because he would have been a perfect guy with Bedard. And so – I don't know, man, like whether it's Kershev or Reichel, are these guys real guys? And
no.
Then you're starting all over again with 18-year-olds. I think, you know, so yeah, I don't think they're hurting them to answer your question directly, but I do think they got ways to go unless they really hit a home run in free agency.
I think those types of players are like the unicorns now, the guys who can go in the corner, muck it up, be responsible defensively, but also put points on the board. I think the Leafs made a mistake getting rid of Hyman. I thought he was fantastic.
Same
going
thing.
To Edmonton, he's took off. But yeah, the Hagels of the world, those guys are They're hard to come by these days.
So hard. And not that, again, not that expensive initially and going forward.
All right. I'm an NCAA guy. I went to Michigan Tech, my alma mater. You love the NCAA. You do the Frozen Four. You're all over. You follow the D1 pretty closely. What do you make of the CHL, obviously getting rid of the transfer rule, that you don't have to sit out a year if you play a game or a year or whatever in the CHL, you can go right to the NCAA. Do you see that hurting the NCAA? Do you see it helping the NCAA? Does it hurt the CHL? What is the major impact of all of this? Because I thought about it a lot. I want to get your take because you follow pretty close.
Yeah, I guess one of those things I don't think we'll really know until it starts happening, right? Yeah. A lot of things in life, we just don't know how it's going to turn out until you do it. That's why I'm all for trying things, see how it works. If it stinks, you change it back or whatever, but you got to give it a shot. Now, again, I think most kids are going to, you know, in Canada, if they're young, then maybe they'll go to junior for a couple of years anyway. They'll have college as an option. You know, college is probably a step up. It'll probably become even closer to the AHL almost. It's like a developmental league while you can still go to college, play fewer games, lift during the week, good for late bloomers. Mm-hmm. Maybe if the occasional blue chipper just wants to go to a BU or North Dakota and enjoy the college experience and the pageantry and the tradition and make maybe 50 grand a year, 75 grand a year, or 100 grand a year, you know, depending on the institution, they can make a little money while they work out, while they be around people, kids their age, while they meet girls, while they just kind of be, hey, I can be a BU alum. The alumni pool in America is very strong in our country. We're a nostalgic country. We're a tradition-based country. And it's almost like an extension of family. And for young kids who are so disjointed now, and they tend to have fewer close friends, they tend to be by themselves more because of the phone and other reasons, to have something they can latch onto for the rest of their life, to say, even if it's only 1 year, which I think is kind of a fake alumni.
Yeah, at but least still.
It's still 1 or 2 years. You can attach yourself to that school for the rest of your life. Go back and enjoy the fruits of that. I like that at a young age. I've always been a romantic when it comes to the campus life. And I've always envisioned myself going back and teaching or coaching or something. So I understand the pull of that place. And I think that's what you sell if you're college. And again, it's not for everybody. Going to class is not for everybody. It's not easy. But so in the end, to answer your question directly, I don't know. But in the end, I don't think it'll affect it that much either way. I really don't. We'll see.
Yeah, Johnny Taves always said, I play for the Fighting Sioux. I'm like, Johnny, come on, not for you. Well, the first maybe foot is dropping here. There's reports this week that Boston College is reaching out to Michael Misa from the Saginaw Spirit, offering him 1.4 schmil in the NIL. So big donors in these big schools, they have the money to throw around. So we could be seeing a transition because you've already seen Owen Power, you had Celebrini. The college pipeline's already set up. So I don't think players are nervous to go to the NCAA. The poaching could start, you know, in the OHL. Like you see these stars and you can offer them, like you said, a relaxed environment, some money, a nice, you know, college town. Like that's enticing for a 16, 17-year-old kid.
Especially a city like Boston, just like college free agents have the advantage. NHL teams who are in cities like New York, Chicago, Boston, they have the advantage in the college free agent game because of the cities where they play.
Oh, yeah.
Exciting young city for So you're right. That also happened in college too, where maybe Ohio State in Columbus, Boston College in Boston.
Michigan, yeah. Michigan Tech.
Boom, same thing. Art capital of the world. The Boston of Michigan, of the Mitten. they might have an advantage. And if obviously a lot of people, alumni of Boston College, have gone on to be very successful. And if they're hockey fans and they want to get together with 20 of their buddies and put this little $3 million in the kitty every year, try to get a star like that, then they can.
All right, Tim, back to your questions.
Okay, halfway through our list here, Mitch Marner is going to be a UFA at the end of the season. Will he re-sign in Toronto?
I think he will. I think they'll try to figure it out. The cap going up, as big as it is, helps. Tavares coming off the books helps. He's just a local kid. He's a star. He's actually their best player right now. Mm-hmm. So they could, you know, try to figure out. They probably still don't know maybe Austin Matthews is long term. I think Marner would sign an 8-year deal there to really kind of, okay, he's our guy. Who knows, maybe eventually he'll reach a point where, like, I think I want to go back to Arizona, gets a team in a couple years, and maybe in 4 years they get to be kind of good. I go back there or LA or something. Maybe he'll feel like doing that.
rephrase this question, not will he resign, should he resign in Toronto?
Him, I mean, I don't know what he wants. If I'm them, yes. And if I'm him, it's whatever he wants to do. So if that's what he wants, yes, he should.
If he likes it,
if it's not too much, but if the fishbowl is too much, he's like, yeah, maybe I'll go play with Bedard. Chicago's a great city. It's close to where I grew up. It's not that far. It's a little 57-minute flight or something. I'll go to Chicago, sign for 14.5 for 7 years and play with Connor Bedard, put up amazing numbers and maybe try to win a cup there. So yeah, you wonder what goes through these guys' heads.
Next question. Will Connor McDavid play his entire career as an Edmonton Oiler?
That's a good one, man. That is a good one. Obviously, the longer he goes out winning a cup, then it's less a chance that happens because let's face it, they're getting older and they could age out fast here. So that there's a possibility he might look to pivot somewhere again, whether it's Toronto. Maybe they're still in a position where they're good if he wants to stay in Canada or if he comes to the States or New York or something, which obviously McDavid in New York City and his pride would be great for the league. But in the end, I think he does. Philosophically, I think he does want to stay there his whole career, but that could change the longer he goes without a cup.
This is his 10th year already in the league.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's incredible.
Yeah, when you come in at 18, you reached 10 years at 28 and you're still young, although the miles are different, as you know. He's probably has the body of a 32-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
He's been beat up. He takes great care of himself. But yeah, it just for hockey's sake, I feel like, gosh, it's almost like a Gretzky effect. I want him to go somewhere else so people can see how great he is. Because you watch him, he's incredible. But yeah, I think he leaves Edmonton.
I think he's officially on the Mount Rushmore now of Gretzky, Mario, or I do believe McDavid is now for it. The numbers are too big. He's third all-time points per game behind Mario and Wayne, and they played in the best era ever to score goals.
Yep.
And he plays in a good era. It's been a good era the last 10 years to score goals, but they played in the best.
This next question comes from Jay Mack in our Patreon. He said, John, if you had a chance to sit down with Bettman and he granted you one wish, what are you going to change about the league?
Well, for him, it would be to get the next big, huge TV deal done, which is coming up here in a couple of years. And like I said, I'm sure he has dreams of Amazon writing a gigantic check. And then it would be to retire and then to really bring in a whole new front office of the NHL regime of a young forward thinking. We talked about it earlier in the podcast about the different competition going on now and really invigorate the league with some really fresh, interesting blood from people around who are keeping, certainly you want to keep some of the old school hardliners because our game is different. It's not like other games. What we value and what we really treasure is important to us. We don't want to lose all of that. I like the tenets of the game. I love the values of the game of selflessness and sacrifice and courage and heart and spirit, all those things. I really do. And I think we should always promote that and sell it. But I do think a new kind of invigoration, whether it's rules, let me rephrase this question. I still stand by that, but also to answer your question directly, I would immediately today eliminate offside reviews completely gone forever. We're not going to do this. We're not doing this anymore, whether it's this or this. I know occasionally there'll be a 10-foot miss, and it happened in the playoffs with Duchesne, and that's terrible. But the consequences of these stupid long reviews, it's not worth it. One NHL referee told me last week, why don't we just do the soccer offside? As long as you're not behind the last defender, you're onside, you know? And again, that'd be impossible. The game's too fast. But I get what he means. Like, this is counterproductive. We are sedating the fans by doing these reviews that are inches or even this much because you still have 60 feet to go to score a goal. You still have to beat a goalie. You still have to beat other guys usually as well. It's not worth it. Gone.
I like that. That's beautiful. I hate
goals,
that rule too.
Yes. Yeah. Goals, fine. Touchdown. Imagine doing offside reviews in football. NFL, a guy was in a neutral zone. Challenge. Yeah. Let's see. Is he off? No. Offside reviews, gone.
Next question. Fill in the blank. Kirill Kaprizov is a top blank player in the NHL.
This year, he's a top one player. I've had an MVP vote the last few years, and if I had one today, if the ballots were mailed today and the season ended today, I would have him number one. He's an absolute magician. He reminds me of Peter Forsberg. He's not a burner skater, but he plays the game at his pace with so much skill and vision. And unlike Forsberg, he's a goal scorer. He's a 40 goal scorer. Yeah. He might get 50 this year. Forsberg never got 40. He got 30 once. So he kind of combines that. So he's made Minnesota sexy, and he's given them such a pizzazz they've never had. They never had really a top three player in the league. You know, they've had some good players, but never like that top dog. And now they have a top dog. And he's right now. But, you know, he's definitely a top 10 player going into this year. But now I have him certainly as a top five, top 3 to 5 player, top MVP finalist, put it that way for now.
We've been pretty critical of the Iser plan on this show. What's your take on what's happening with Detroit's rebuild?
Oh, no.
I actually think they're coming now. Like, I believe in Raymond's a star. Sider, Edvinson is an absolute star. He's going to be a 50 to 60 point, 6 foot, 6 inch defenseman. I really like Casper, the center. He gets around the ice. I really like him as like that really good number two guy. The problem is they need like 5 more forwards, and they need 3 more Ds, and they need a goalie. Now, you can do that somewhat quickly. Again, we saw what Washington did. They made a couple of depth trades. They make a nice sign, and, you know, Mangiapane's a perfect third-line depth guy. And like someone like him, like a real, and they keep rolling out these same guys over and over again, these 27th overall picks that are, you know, are scoring 4 goals a year. They have 2 goals right now. It's not working. So, but I do think the core, and if Kosa's the guy in net, and he's kind of a real goalie, then suddenly I think now they're a home run free agent guy away, whether it's Rantanen or whether it's Marner, someone like that. Okay, that instantly brings them up. And then they got to figure out that bottom six as well, which you can do in this league.
No, seriously, if they get 10 or 12 more guys who are really, really good, and then they hit it, and they hit it in the draft, and then they go out and get free, then they'll be really good. I'm serious, you guys.
I'm serious. Seriously.
That's because Bucci's probably good friends with the Iserman, and he's like, oh, he's doing a great job.
No, I'm not. I do like the core. I called their game in Boston a couple weeks ago, and I said, you know what? There's 6-7 guys who are really good. They just need like 2 or 3 really good guys, and then the other guys just got to be better. I mean, that's the problem, you know, in their group.
Yeah, these guys get better, and then we get better players, and then we get a goalie, and then 3 or 4 defensemen. Oh, this team's going to be dangerous. It's going to be dangerous.
Man, so damn good.
Next question. Give us a West Coast or a small market player that deserves more attention on the national level for how good he is.
Wow.
Oh, that's a tough one,
West
Tim.
West Coast or small market player. Well, you know, I know he's like Quinn Hughes, because he plays in Vancouver so late at night. Like, he is so good.
Yeah.
He is super duper duper star, what he provides Vancouver when he's on the ice against when he isn't. And again, I know people know Quinn Hughes is good, especially the, you know, the hardcore hockey fan, but even the casual fan probably doesn't realize. Again, another guy, if he played in New York or Boston, would be a much bigger star. But someone like him, I realize how, you know, he actually is pretty underappreciated for how really, really good he is.
What's Mishkov's ceiling? Do you see him being a Hart guy at some point?
I do. You know what? He reminds me of, I put him in that Kaprizov Forsberg group of this guy's not a burner, but he is so smart, and he plays with a little bit of a fire. Like Forsberg had a lot of fire. Yeah. He played in the hardest era to score goals, Peter Forsberg. And he still succeeded. He would have been amazing today. He would have been amazing in the 40s. And he was amazing when he played, when it was so hard to score. There was hooking. He just gave it. So that's what Mishkov reminds me of is that Kaprizov Forsberg body type, amazing vision. But again, like Kaprizov, he's going to score too. Like, he's going to be a 40 goal scorer. Going to make people better, like Kaprizov makes people better. And obviously Forsberg. So yeah, I'm very bullish on Mishkov.
I'm actually impressed on how Torts is handling him too, because
I agree.
I think he's doing a great job. He sat him down that
player.
One game.
He's a plus player.
He's playing great. He's kind of letting him do his thing and staying out of his way. And I think Torts gets that, and he knows that
he likes his competitiveness.
Yeah.
This kid has fire, right? And he likes that.
Yeah. Sorry, Tim, go ahead.
Well, I think to everyone's surprise, the Capitals are the number one team in the East right now. Do you see them as a legit cup contender?
Probably not a legit cup contender, but I do think they're really, really good, and upsets happen. And, you know, the Panthers could lose somehow in the first round. If crazy things happen, it happens. It's hard to win Stanley Cups, and that opens up the East. But yeah, I think it's going to be tougher to score in the playoffs. But what they did on defense, they have a really good defensive core. The goalies, are they real playoff type goalies who are going to be good for 2 months? That's going to be a little bit of a question mark. They play hard in their forward group. They have experience. And then someone like McMichael who pops out of nowhere. You need a young guy to pop. Every organization, like I said, the Red Wings or the Sabres, like they're looking for a couple more guys. Paterka's popped in Buffalo. Need two more guys to pop, you know? Mm-hmm. And they got this McMichael guy, and then Ovi is now chasing a record, so it's invigorating him. It's going to invigorate the team. They're good down the middle with Strome and Dubois, I think, has found a home now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think they're like in that just below the top tier. But sometimes teams just below the top tier win the cup. It happens some years if things fall like they do and there's upsets and good matchups for them.
We have another question from the Patreon. This is from TC. He wants to know what your favorite golf course you've played on and where is it?
I always say, like, you know, Pebble Beach really only has, it's like a 12-hole golf course. The rest of them aren't great, but those holes, you know, 4 through 11 and then 17 and 18 are so good. I remember walking, you know, up the sixth hole, and just there's mountains, there's an ocean, and there's like just unbelievable. The beauty and the vibe there is just a little different than anywhere else. So I always kind of default to that, even though I've been lucky to play a lot of great ones around the world. But something about that experience, we were first group off with three great friends. It was a beautiful day, sunny, calm. And so that was very memorable.
I like that spyglass there too. We had a
beautiful
the meetings there one time, and it was beautiful. I'm not a big golfer.
Well, yeah, so there's deer going across the fairway. It's like you're in a movie or something. But yeah, we went out and played spyglass, stayed the night in the lodge at Pebble, and then we were first off in the morning, the following morning. Great couple of days. 2006.
Being with ESPN, what's like the coolest thing you get to do about your job? Because you, like you said, you fly everywhere, you do a game, you do four or whatever a month, and a lot of downtime. You're around hockey guys, you're around people most people don't get to be around.
Yeah,
what's like
cool.
The neatest thing?
Well, when I had a young family, they're all grown now. I started young, and they're all, it is free Disney passes, because, you know, ESPN.
Yeah.
ESPN was bought by Walt Disney the same year I was hired in 1996. And so all those years going to Disney for free was pretty cool. So that was probably the coolest part. And but yeah, you're right. Just the hockey has been such a gift. Meeting these people, playing around the golf with Wayne Gretzky, walking over to Bobby Orr at this charity event for the first time, and him saying, "John," I go, "How does Bobby Orr know who I am?" But, you know, he was an agent in the late 90s. Of course, he's going to watch NHL tonight. But I thought when I did that show at 1 a.m., no one was watching. I just thought it was me and Barry Melrose and Ray Ferraro, and we're just looking at a camera. No one's watching this show. And when I realized, wow, people are actually, especially then, because that was pre-internet video, you had to watch NHL tonight to see highlights. Only place you saw them. And we were on every night. You know, five nights a week, which is really cool. A half hour highlight hockey show. There's not one of those really now. We have analysts every night. So it was really ahead of its time, and it was so great to be a part of that. Yeah, then traveling to the finals and meeting people and, you know, becoming friends with Ray Bourque. And it's like, this is just amazing. You know, I was 13 when he came to Boston and was this kid who came out of nowhere, this mythical figure. But again, before you could see video and things like that, they just kind of appeared out of nowhere, like they were dropped from Mars and started playing on your favorite team. It's like, wow, this guy's amazing. And then you end up being friends with them. Like, it's so that's the best gift is the amount of, like, we talked about how young people, so I get so sad for these young people. They have these surveys, like there's like some, like 20% of people under 30, these guys that don't have a best friend. It's like, oh my God, I have like 95 best friends, you know, from high school and college and hockey and ESPN and television. So that's been the biggest blessing, is the network of friends.
It is funny how things change, because Ray Bourque was my idol growing up, and I got to meet him at a charity event a few years ago, and he was so nice. Come to Boston, come into my restaurant, I'll set you up, this and that. And I look back, just what you're saying, I still have friends when I started playing with, I talked to, I just was in Joe Thornton's retirement ceremony last year in San Jose.
Yeah.
And you go and you catch up with these guys, like, you just fall right back into the routine, because you're all just great buddies. And I feel like that's what's missing in hockey today, is that kind of camaraderie. And I talk to coaches and players all over the time, and like, all we need is just one night out a week where all the boys go out and hang out, or one night out every couple of weeks. They don't do that anymore.
No.
Do you feel like the play is so good? The skill is so good. It's come it so is. Far. You look at the fourth line, guys are putting up insane points. When I played, wasn't that way. We were garbage. But is hockey better than it used to be? Because you've seen it grow the last 30-some years. Did you enjoy the scrums, the fighting, the defense, the hooking? Like, you really earned a goal if you got that goal. And there was just a lot more passion, it seems like, than there is today.
No, right. You'll watch a game and there's like sometimes not a big body check, maybe kind of one.
Gosh, there's, none.
And there's not even, but even maybe worse so, although not worse so, body checks are awesome. There's not even any confrontations.
Yeah.
Like no more. Like there's very rarely a face wash anymore.
Yeah,
even a push and a shove that energizes, that gets the crowd on their feet. It gets their blood. Let's face it, we're kind of violent creatures, us human beings, so through evolution, and that kind of gets our blood flowing. And there's a lot of times that it brought an energy to the game. An occasional fight, body checking, pushing and shoving, extreme yelling, and they grew up more now as friends. All the elite players play together against each other growing up. So unfortunately, they have a relationship, which I know when I played high school sports, I could not have a relationship with my opponent.
Yeah.
Because I had to hate them. Otherwise I would be soft. I couldn't play. I'm not one of those friends who could play my friends and beat them up. And I just couldn't, I'm not built that way. Mm-hmm. I need to hate you to play against you. And I would not shake hands before the game. I just couldn't do it. And nowadays, and it's in those faces, these things as the phone, get lost in their world. You don't listen to the same music. Everyone listens to their own music. And so, and that's why I still like my job as a broadcaster. We still kind of, we fly into the game the night before, we meet out, we have a drink, we have a great dinner, we laugh, we get up the next day, we go to their morning skate, we talk to players and coaches, we go back, we have our lunch, we take our naps, we get up, we go, we do the game together. I'm right next to you. Then afterwards, we go out, we have a couple drinks, we laugh about the game, talk about the game, talk about life. And it's just awesome. And then we go to bed and we get up and fly home. So it's a great 2-3 days. I love that. And I'm sure as a player, that's how back in the day, that's how you guys felt. Like, we got a little road trip, do this, da that, da that, da that. Now it's like so business, so serious, so much money. It's tough. And again, I think that's contributed a lot to these young people. Some of their lack of joy in life is because of that, whatever it is, whether they feel like they're being watched with cameras and phones and pictures. I get that. Because a lot of these young players, this generation, were burned like on Snapchat and things like that. People screen captured a lot of these little things. And now you still see them occasionally, not terrible, awful things, but little embarrassing things that I'm sure Connor McDavid would not rather be out there, that occasionally you'll see once in a while because they'd understand you could, the technology, and someday they'd be world famous. They didn't know that when they were 13, 14 years old.
I know. I still remember my first couple years pro, they still had the payphone banks at the hotel. So you get in. The older guys, like the brunettes and the old Nolans, they'd hit the payphone bank and be like, "All right, honey, I'm here. I'll talk to you in the next city." And then it's away you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
You go grab dinner. And then it's just kind of you're on your own. You're in your own little bubble. But it's things. Anyways, back to hockey, John.
Yep.
Last one.
Life lessons here, kids. We're giving you pearls.
Seriously. Put that phone down, damn it. It's true, though. I have 8 kids and they're begging me for phones. And my oldest turns 13 in a couple of weeks. I'm like, not a chance. You ain't getting one until you're maybe 16, 17, maybe.
That was my rule. Not till you drive. You don't need a phone till you drive. That was my rule.
Not a smartphone either. You can get by in a flip phone.
Absolutely.
You don't need a smartphone. Anyway, last one. If the Cup's final started today, who's going to be in it?
I call that, if you had to bet a paycheck, like you had to.
Yep.
Bet a paycheck, who are you picking to win the Cup? That's how I usually phrase that question. Mm-hmm. Then you really think about it. I would still, to be in 4 straight finals, like the Florida Panthers.
Yeah.
But I think they need a defenseman at the deadline. So that is kind of a caveat. They need to add a defenseman. Losing Montour and Ekman-Larsson were big. They didn't really replace them.
Mm-hmm.
And fully. So I still like the Panthers in the East to get back there. In the West, will McDavid, will this generational Mount Rushmore guy figure it out and somehow get that Cup? It might still be 2-3-4 years away. It might not be with this group.
Question, John.
I know. So I'm going to go Colorado.
Stop.
Something tells me they're back when they're healthy. Colorado versus Florida.
You just lost your whole paycheck. Do you believe that?
I almost went Dallas. I almost went because I know everyone's on Dallas and they're really good and they might trade Jason Robertson. You never know. They might deal him and to try to get even in their minds better than they already are. So they're very aggressive. They have cap space with the Sagan long term thing. And so, all right, I'm going to change my mind. I'm going to say Dallas, because I can't afford to miss that.
And then even you're dogging my Minnesota Wild there. So, but anyways, okay. That's it, Tim. Right. You got anything else?
Thanks for coming on, man. This has been great.
I love the South Boston resident permit parking. My mom and dad both grew up in South Boston.
Nice.
We And every year, I grew up in Pennsylvania and Ohio, but every year my dad took his 2 weeks vacation from Sears, his job at Sears, and we would drive to South Boston. That was our vacation. So I'll be speaking, I'll say, you know, some people go to the south of France for vacation, South Beach, South Carolina. I went to South Boston every year for 18 consecutive years for my vacation.
That's there great. You go, Tim. Wow.
Yeah, I live
never going to hear the end of that.
That'd be cool.
All right, John Buchagras, thanks, my friend, for coming on. This was a blast. You exceeded expectations. We absolutely loved it. Good luck with everything you're doing. I hopefully we reconnect again down the road, but I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Tim. It was an honor.
All right, everybody. Have a good one. We'll talk to you next time. Cheers.
Peace.
Hey guys, it's Peter Crouch and Chris Stark here from That Peter Crouch Podcast, and we're currently sponsored by Prime.
This holiday season, Amazon brings you an unmissable month of festive football.
Prime members can enjoy 10 Premier League games.
All live.
And Tuesday's UEFA Champions League must-watch match, included with Prime.
And where is it, Chris?
It's on Prime, Crouchy.
I thought so.